Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network and powered by largemanappears.com. It's I, your host, your little boy Blue on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I am joined, as I am every week when we are actually recording a podcast. He's my co-host, he's Staggerly Malone. Lee, how the fuck are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. I'm doing good.
Sight for sore eyes.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Aside for sore laptops as well. This is maybe not our first attempt at this intro.
Yeah, if our intro is a little bit less high energy than you'd expect after a big return,
it's because it's some 45 minutes after we sat down.
Don't have kids, don't have technology. That's the gist of the intro here. So, Thunder.
Rather than lie to them and try and recapture the magic of the scintillating chat of the first, what's the cliff notes is, I'm very sorry that it's entirely my fault that we've been gone so long, because I've been trying to juggle everything, not so easy. Then we somehow got...
I was just going to say, I mean, you're not Dave Meltzer's brother, so, you know, I mean, juggling isn't your forte.
Yeah. Then I believe we moved from that to you're old, and then we got cut off around the time we were talking about gas station boner pills.
Yes.
These are all legitimate things we discussed, and you will never hear it.
Whether Dave or myself are pro or anti-boner pills, you'll never know.
But you can guess by the owners of the network we're on what side of the fence we fall on.
Brilliant.
You do you, guys. You do you. So it was a long dissection of Irish pub bathroom culture.
It was, actually, yeah.
As well. Yeah. And actually where we left off was the thing that I want to pick up on. So we were talking about where you might procure said, because we don't do the gas station boner pills. It's where we kind of finished off on. And I was discussing how you could occasionally get something of the sort in an Irish pub in these grotty little machines that had the same brand of mints, smints, always. They would have some brand of chewing gum. They would have maybe two different brands you'd never heard of condoms.
Yes.
And then sometimes that final slot on the machine would be taken up by a, you know, completely holistic, massive boner pill. On occasion, on rare occasion. But that led you into talking about the phenomenon. I don't know if it was an international phenomenon, but it certainly was a rash of head shops selling, marijuana related accoutrement.
Yes.
Shops that sprung up a lot in like the late 2000s, early 2010s, that definitely weren't money laundering or drug dealing operations a front for them anyway. Definitely not.
I mean, listen, if you can own a store with a big marijuana leaf in the window, but you're totally legal and definitely not selling marijuana out from the back of the shop.
Now, I will set the disclaimer. that I have, in fact, and this is not no hyperbole. I'm not working anybody here, and Lee can verify this because he knows me, and we have hung out socially many times. I have never done drugs in my life. I am absolutely whatever you want to do yourself, that's absolutely fine. It's never been for me. Have I been in head shops? 100%. Did I know people who worked in head shops? Absolutely. Did I, at one point, out of curiosity, ask them to show me the room off to the side and what merchandise was sold in there just to see if certain suspicions of mine about these shops had always been correct? Yes, I did. What I found there, I don't think the statute of limitations has run out on yet.
That's all you need to know.
But it reminded me, and this is why I wanted to bring it back up on this version of the recording of the new version of that that happens in Ireland now are the candy cloud stores. Oh, these are all over the place now, Lee. If they're not in your hometown, there's one coming there very soon, and it's these
Candy clouds.
they're called like candy cloud, like variations of that word, and what they are is it's half a vape shop
Okay.
and half a exotic American Asian candy import shop.
Oh, okay, right.
And the gimmick is, and there's one of these, there's many of them around Ireland now. There's one in the town I live in, a big one, right smack bang in the middle of, you know, the town I live in,
I
opposite the
do.
Penny's there. That's how central it is in that town. Okay, right. There's one in the town I work in, both very working class towns. And the gimmick I've noticed with both of them is they're open suspiciously late. No one ever seems to be in there. And the odd time you might see somebody go in there, they browse and they don't come out with anything. And these places have been open now, these two I'm thinking of in particular, well over a year. I'm not saying that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark, but I am saying that literally as I went to log on, I did see on your auntie's favorite news source of choice, Facebook, because I was looking for somebody's I was looking for a photo I had with somebody that I wanted to send them from, like, so I rarely ever log on to Facebook.com, but I was seeing an article from an actual news site of repute in Ireland. That there had been a raid in one of those candy cloud shops in the country somewhere just yesterday evening, and they found 4,500 euro worth of drug paraphernalia. So, I'm not gonna say I was right all along, but when you got instincts, folks, you gotta follow them. You gotta follow them.
Listen, the big scandal at the moment in my town is that we're getting the Turkish barbers.
Ooh, oh yeah, those were the kind of like the pulled pork of 2025. Like the Turkish barbers popped up everywhere.
Oh yeah, and like we're a
Yeah,
small village and it's popping up here, so
yeah. You've
that's
got the two
anyhow.
kinds. You've got the Turkish barbers pop up everywhere, and then the other end of the scale, price wise, you've got like the slightly bougie, middle class, MMA enjoyers barber, like a Grafton barber or something like that, that pops up and caught. Like, I've had roughly the same haircut most of my adult life, apart from when I've grown out my hair the couple of times I did that, right? So I either get the head shaved down or I get a very simple trim. And in the year of our Lord 2026, these places are trying to charge me around 30 quid for that now.
Fucking sick, innit?
Fuck, game's gone, mate. Game's gone.
We were in Westport, Mayo. The start of this week.
By the way, that's not a lovely sandwich. That's a place for our American friends.
Yeah,
I was having a Westport Mayo the other day. Oh, fuck, tangy.
it's literally next stop is New York. Like that's how far across the west of Ireland are.
If you keep driving, your feet will start getting wet very quickly after Westport.
But yeah, we were over in Westport, which is, as you know, as far away from Dublin and Leinster as you can get.
Yes.
And we walked past a barber that had nobody in it, and Jen pointed out the prices on the on like they had the price full on prices on the window.
Yeah.
€28 for a men's cut.
Fucking hell. Yeah, the place that's nearest me is not far off that now, I'd have to say.
Sickening.
Shocking. Shocking behavior. Shocking behavior. But other than that, Lee, I think it's great to be back, and it's great to have an excuse to watch wrestling. Because we're not going to talk current wrestling chat or anything like that. But I gotta tell you, I've struggled with keeping up with wrestling the last over this period that we've been gone.
I think we have chatted wrestling twice.
Yeah. And this is not to say, like, for most of the time we've been gone, AEW's been on a hot streak. But I just think, I again, without getting too deep in the weeds on this, because Lord knows what may have changed by the time you guys hear this episode, but I just think, I think the overall cultural dominance and market share of WWE has really worn me down. And even though AEW, my preferred company in terms of style, like, I've no loyalty to the company, but in terms of what I want to see, it's closer to my vision of professional wrestling than anything else in America. I think even though that's been resurgent the last year and a half, I think I struggle because that time, that blissful time we lived in where AEW was in touching distance of Raw and it would have maybe created lasting change in the market leader. That time is over now. And it's I don't know, it's very dispiriting. And that has me a little bit discouraged. Generally. And I think I also think the other thing I used to love about, like, when we all got, like, I had never really wavered in terms of watching wrestling. I'd never really fully ever stopped in my life since I was 6 years old. But I think one of the things that really fueled me in the 2010s into the 2020s was when we all discovered social media and we had online spaces to talk wrestling in. And I think actually a huge part of it isn't even as much, I don't want to give WWE too much credit for poisoning the well, as much as it is, like, discourse, like the ability to have nuanced and interesting discussions about wrestling has just gone. And because of that, because I find it's kind of like, you know, when you read a comic book and when you used to watch the early Marvel movies, and one of the fun parts used to be, like, unpacking, like, what did you think of the story? Where is it going to go next? You know, can't wait for the next thing, and talking different theories and stuff like that with your friends. The idea of a nascent fandom, like, all that's kind of gone now. Like, most people will have noticed, like, I'm the one of the two of us that's still technically on Twitter, but I don't really post now. And I'm somebody that used to, like, up until a couple of years ago, used to pretty much religiously live tweet through every wrestling show I watched and eagerly seek out discussion around it. And it's gotten so piss poor in terms of people's, I think, literacy when it comes to understanding professional wrestling and having discussions about it with other adults. Or even other people, just in a mature fashion. It doesn't even have to be with adults, but just in a mature fashion, that it's even poisoned the well. We're obviously in a couple of spaces. We're lucky enough with our network that we have our little Discord channel for Days of Thunder is great, and everybody in there are the exact kind of, like, level of wrestling fan I want to discuss things with. And obviously our staff chat for VOW as well. But I think the noise everywhere else has become so bad that I've even plugged out of those spaces now. Because again, I suppose it's the perspective shift of having a child. I mean, like, if discussion 95% of the time online now is piss poor, why am I wasting my time? I'll tune in on my Wednesday, I'll tune in on my Saturday, and that's it. But I feel like a little bit of the spark has gone because of that. As much as I'm enjoying it as I'm watching it.
I 100% understand where you're coming from, because I had definitely had a couple of months like that last year where I just felt I wasn't invested in anything I was watching. I couldn't, like, WWE, like, we've been over this a million times on the show over the past number of years. It's not for us. Like New Japan, which I would have watched fairly regularly, I just couldn't get into it. And AEW, I just felt like, wasn't serving the audience it set out to serve.
Yeah, I think it wasn't until, like, maybe late summer last year where things started. Like, the build to the stadium show in Texas, the all in, the all in, I think was when it finally started cooking again.
But yeah, no, I've been there with you in regards of like, yeah, I dumped Twitter and kind of never looked back, and I tried with Blue Sky. It's not for me.
I don't think it's really for anybody. I think people are gaslighting themselves into thinking it's a good platform, to be honest.
It seems to be a very small group of people that.
The one thing that I think I've understood from peers that still use it is I think it's a better networking tool.
Okay.
So like I think of our good friend of the show, Mark Robinson, who obviously, buy Axies on Steam today. But since he's gotten into game development, I think he said like that part of Blue Sky is very much alive in terms of building professional contacts and getting to PR people and getting the name of
Oh,
your
that's
game
good.
out there. Because one of the things, for better or for worse, Blue Sky cuts out a lot of the noise of Twitter. That cuts both ways in that it cuts out a lot of the trash, but it also cuts out a lot of the kind of fun, instant, immediate. This is where the vital conversation is happening that Twitter had at its best as well.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Twitter still in, 2026 seems to have a lot of important conversations going on. It's just with the worst people.
Yeah, and still in the meth-addled claws of a shit Bond villain as well, which doesn't help.
But like I found that I've started kind of using the. Obviously, we have to staff Slack and stuff, and that's great. But like publicly, like I use the VW Discord a bit more, and yeah, I mean, look, you're not going to agree with everybody, and there is some that are just out to troll, and that's going to happen in any space, whether it's the VW Discord, the Post Discord, fucking Grapple Discord, wherever it is you're using, any public space. There's always going to be people there just to wind others up, and there's always going to be people that you disagree with, and fundamentally, you'll probably never agree with on any subject, and that's fine. That's the thing of using a public space.
For sure.
But there is good conversations to be had. You just kind of have to seek them out a little bit more now, and have to be willing to kind of,
Put in the hard yards.
yeah. Like I know Twitter was very easy to ignore responses. Like if you were having a conversation with, say, our good friend Barry, and if somebody jumps in and doesn't understand the tone of your conversation, it can be frustrating, but it's very easy to ignore. Whereas if you were in a Discord, for instance, where it's instant messaging, it's very annoying when somebody is constantly jumping in.
Yeah, it's a little bit like it has a little bit of the vibe of the old message boards, which were navigable once you took that into account and stuff. And look, like I said, to wrap it up, like I don't want to put all that, give WWE so much credit that they've permanently, but there has been a cultural shift the last few years. I think the closest, the reason I tie it so much in my head to WWE specifically is I think the moment I became very conscious of the switch was when. There's a moment a couple of years ago where I think a lot of people who either recreationally or professionally cover wrestling started almost gaslighting themselves into thinking WWE was good because it's the rationalization they needed to give themselves to keep watching it. And I could, there was just a fundamental disconnect for me there where I'm just like, this isn't good. Like, it's nowhere near good. Like, if you did exactly this back when things actually were good and we were all agreeing it was good, you would hate it. And I don't want to pin, I'm not going to like name names of
Name names, yeah, no,
publications
of
or
course.
sites or anything like that. But I think we can all think of two or three people in our head who were just like, this is something I know you
Don't enjoy.
personally 5 years ago would have said was dog shit, and it's still objectively dog shit, but that kind of window has shifted now where you kind of, because it's the industry leader, you kind of have to settle for in your head, this is as good as it's going to get. And I think at that moment, I'm like, okay, even the people that are supposed to be kind of leading the discussion or being fundamentally dishonest with themselves is when I started to lose a lot of faith in being able to have discussions in those public fora anymore. But that's a very, very long-winded and haughty-taughty way, Lee, of saying, I am so happy to be back talking about 2000 WCW.
Who would have thought the year 2000 WCW Thunder would save your wrestling habit?
Yeah. And I think, do you know what? I think going forward, now, obviously, we would have originally watched this show before our last break. So my notes don't reflect that. But I think, in light of the discussion we've just had, something I think that I'm going to keep back of mind as we continue on down Thunder Road here is to try and be more cognizant of what lessons may be between watching the shows, reading the observers, kind of being kind of aware of how the fans are responding to things. Like, what are the lessons that we can bring forward now, not just of the failures of WCW, but even there is such a beauty in how simple wrestling should and could be. And even elements of, like, look, this is a company that's dying on its arse, and this is, don't get me wrong, this show is fucking piss poor that we're about to talk about, right? This Thunder 101, boy howdy. But even that, like, I look at, there are so many elements of the visual presentation of World Championship Wrestling in 2000 that somehow, in spite of all of the advancements we've had since, I much prefer the presentation style of 2000 WCW over, say, 2026 WWE. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think there will be things going forward that we can pull from that I can think about. And again, something I'll be more mindful of in reading The Observer will be, okay, like, what are the things, like, the quaint things we were talking about and getting mad about back in 2000, versus now, I think will be an interesting thing, to reflect on. How was it for you? Did it feel weird after this time, and again after us kind of feeling a bit abject in the back half of 2025 when it came to wrestling? How was it for you to settle back into, like, the old pair of slippers you found stuffed under the bed?
I think I said this like a couple of shows ago, but I do find like comparing 2000 WCW as that's the era we're in to modern wrestling, I just find it comfortable.
Yeah.
There's like you said, it's not good. I'm not saying it's good, but there's a charm to late stage WCW that I don't think any current day wrestling has.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just like I said, I don't think it's good, but I enjoy it. But like, when we've gone to watch, 99, 2000 WWF, we fucking hated it on rewatch. And that's astounding to me because, we both grew up WWF fans, and it's that thing of like you're going back and watching the stuff you grew up on and loved, and we both would have been familiar with the WCW at this stage and probably would have seen bits here and there, and you probably would have seen a little bit more than me, but like WCW just retains this. Maybe it's because it's not so trashy. Maybe it's because, ultimately they lost the war for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
And, WWE and Vince McMahon would go on to kind of shit all over their legacy in a sense. So, like, I don't know if I feel this kind of need to be honest about exactly what WCW was towards the end, that WWF won't tell, historically the victors won't tell you about, like they won't tell you that, yeah, Jeff Jarrett may have been over pushed, but he did have good points too. Yes, Sid wasn't great, but also he's fucking Sid.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting that happens with the nostalgia factor of, I think you've hit on it there, is that when we look back on WWF at that period of time, because we know it was the hot company, it's the one that won the war, the only things that stick out in our memory until we go back and actually watch it are the good things, right? And similarly, because WCW died, and we've had an insulting, or not insulting, well, insulting in a way, but ensuing quarter century of the narrative of this is the worst company that ever existed. I think the only things that stick out in our mind are the bad things. And both are true. There was plenty of good things in WWF, and there was plenty of bad things in WCW. But I think there is still plenty, and it's, look, it's the genesis of the show. It's one of the reasons we're here. It's part of the mission statement, is that there's still plenty of interesting things to talk about happening, even in 2000. And part of that is the real end of history vibes, is that we know, and we're kind of like these archaeologists documenting the individual decisions and booking moments and matches and personalities that are all contributing to this fast approaching end for WCW. But I also think it's the thing of like there's so much hidden intrigue to this period of time that, like, obviously, you know, we'll scrap the WWE sanitized version of history, but even things like, say, the Guy Evans, the Nitro book, or even the death of WCW, Reynolds and Alvarez, I think. Because your books, like, there's things that have to be cut out and there's things that have to be put in, and you have to kind of decide on what your narrative is going to be and what are the things you include and exclude to make it. Otherwise, these books would be fucking massive tomes, you know what I mean? So I think going back and living in these shows as they're happening has been really enlightening to me. Again, as somebody like you alluded to it there at the start, when we started talking about WCW, is that I did watch. By now, I'm watching every week when I'm 11 years old at the time, and even I have forgotten a considerable amount of this because of the, again, the ravages of time. So it is interesting to be back, even if it is, as we said in this case, and in many cases yet to come, a diabolical television program by many metrics.
Like I know it, I know it's a bit on the show for you to kind of throw to me whether it's a Sid match because you know I unironically do enjoy Sid, but like nobody talks about how he was the most over guy in this company for the last 2 years of its run. That doesn't
And you
get
want to
talked
talk,
about.
yeah, and you want to talk about like trying to pull a positive from WCW, and the other thing I said about learning lessons for now. If only fucking Tony Khan could book a big man like
Oh man.
WCW was booking Sid in 2000.
What I wouldn't give for a Sid on TV right now.
And that, like, you want to talk about, like, you know, the often thing, the often said thing, whether you're WWE or AEW, do the thing the other guy can't, or do the thing the other guy won't. And like, yeah, if you found, like, obviously SIDs don't grow on trees, do you know what I mean? But if you found a guy like that, like if you found a just a massive freak with charisma, and just strapped the rocket to him and see what happens. Like, for good or for ill, something WWF was always good at is like, if we get a guy who just looks like a freak of nature that passes the airport test, we'll give it a go. And sometimes it was fucking magic, and sometimes it was Great Khali, you know? And I think there is a, I was talking a bunch to somebody today about this is, wait, this will snap your neck, this comparison I'm about to make. I was talking to somebody about Arteta's Arsenal, right? And about how something that has characterized their season in football is a lack of daring. They won't risk it all to win, you know?
They'd rather not lose than win.
Yeah. And I think there is a little bit of that in all the top companies now, where there is a kind of, we will stick with what got us to the dance and not try the crazy out of the box. Like, again, Tony pushing like a physical freak of nature, WWE pushing someone under 40, you know, all these crazy, crazy ideas. But anyway. Let's park that for now and go back to 2000. I'm afraid, Lee, I don't have too much from the Observer this week. It'll just be a whistle-stop tour of the big three promotions, because most of the Observer, so the Observer issue that's relevant to this week is the February 28th edition of the Observer, about 5 days after this show. And it's a lot of, like, I don't want to say Dave smelling his own farts, but like the main story that goes on for several pages is him going, look, we're doing this, I'm having this discussion with myself in my own newsletter about the idea of deciding on a wrestler of the century for the 20th century.
Okay.
So it's him breaking down over several pages what the criteria would be that you could evaluate a wrestler of the century under, whether it's like ring psychology, star power, merchandise, you know, ticket sales, all that, whatever you want. So it's a lot of that, which I suppose, like, if you're into the nuts and bolts, because like I don't want to be dismissive of Dave. Again, it's the newsletter of record, and I think looking into the process can be interesting. But I think for the reason we're trying to mine the Observers on this show, it's not very interesting.
No, it's not for this show right now. But I think it will be fascinating to go back and read and see how he went through the thought process and what he eventually ended up with.
Yeah, but I'll jump through the promotions here and just stop on anything I see interesting. The top story from ECW, I think, is quite interesting, and it is relevant to our work here, and that is Sabu is expected to attempt litigation to get out of his ECW contract and take the WCW offer he has on the table. There's some heat in WCW regarding him because of the feeling he misrepresented himself to them by claiming he didn't have a valid contract. He was trying to get independent dates because WCW won't use him until he's cleared, but Paul Heyman has stated that since he's under contract to ECW, any independent promoters wanting to use him would have to go through ECW. His mother was released from hospital and is doing better. Chris Candido and Tammy Sitch are also still awaiting a release from ECW to get a look by WCW. So I suppose the one spoiler we can give is that Tammy and Chris would get their release and move to WCW, mm-hmm. and old Terry Brunk would not.
Yeah, this is how Sabu ends up in XPW.
Yes. And look, you know, workers are workers and all that, and I assume any company is going to be, especially in a post-Pillman era, are going to be suspicious that the wrestler is misrepresenting himself, mm-hmm. but I would have to say, given all we know about Paul Heyman, it is entirely reasonable to suggest that Sabu rightly assumed that he wasn't tied to ECW, only for Paul to find the loophole of all loopholes.
Yes, yeah, I'd imagine there. I'd imagine that contract had been long broken by Heyman, but yeah.
Again, the amount of guys he managed to sweet talk into staying, saying they were technically under contract, even though by not paying them repeatedly, that should have voided their contracts, mm-hmm. one would imagine, speaks to the kind of power that man had over his talent. It's interesting. I don't know. Like, I feel like, apart from, you know, padding out his retirement fund, I don't know. I don't think Sabu is going to come in and be like a major deal in WCW. I think we were going to see him in some of those fucking like scrapyard hardcore matches. I think that's exactly, you kind of would have seen him do the Sandman speed run.
Yeah, feud with Finley, feud with three count.
Yeah. I don't think, like, I don't think any, and this is the thing about Sabu, like, his greatest blessing and his greatest curse is I don't think there's anywhere he could have succeeded apart from ECW in that very specific time. I think if he came around any earlier, any later, or was in any other company, he wouldn't have been as big a deal. The only place I could think of is, like, Puerto Rico or, like, you know, deathmatch promotions in Japan, obviously.
If he wasn't, you know, so Sabu, he probably could have had a bigger run in Japan, but he's Sabu, so of course he didn't.
Yes. So yeah, that's just interesting from ECW. You will notice that one of the thing, like, there's two tones to a lot of the ECW stories that we might make mention of for the rest of the year, and it is people trying to get out of their contracts and people getting hurt. I think that's pretty much like all that is worth noting. Just going through the WCW notes, there wasn't a lot of like ratings news this week in the main headlines because of I can't remember why Dave said. So a lot of his talk about the business metrics move into the individual news sections. Some notes on the Ready to Rumble movie. The movie
Uh-oh.
pushed Nitro, TNT, and WCW a lot. We read a review from a fan who said he liked the movie a lot, but felt it would be hard to sell to non-wrestling fans. You can fucking say that. The sound effects were said to be great. The filming of a Nitro at the Grand Olympic Auditorium in Los Angeles looked bad because in every camera angle the arena looked small. And I do remember that. And we are going to be reviewing Ready to Rumble very soon on this podcast in the main timeline. But I do remember that is that they managed to, like I it looked like a Nitro for ants in the movie. The climax was filmed at the Olympic and it looked like there was only about 1,000 people in attendance. In the movie, the climax was supposed to be from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. So I'm not gonna go straight into all of it because I don't know how long it's been since you've watched the movie, Lee. So I don't want to get back into the he, it literally Dave recounts huge chunks of the plot here.
Of course he does.
So
He's Dave.
it's
That's what he Dave
frustrating.
does.
Yeah. This might shock you, Lee, in our next story. Ric Flair officially isn't running for governor of North Carolina.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. Could you guess, take a wild guess at where the pro re which party the pro wrestler from North Carolina was attempting to be the candidate for?
I'm going to guess he wasn't a Green Party candidate.
No, he missed the date for the Republican filing. Somebody was trying to get him to run as the reform candidate, but he'd have no chance as an independent because America. Dave says realistically, it seems like it was more of a publicity stunt to test the waters than something he was going to seriously do at some point. It's funny, like the more we talk about how different him and Hulk were, the more similar they were. Hulk Hogan for president. Anybody remember that? Nash has been talking about doing an angle where he has amnesia. Like the last time, Cactus Jack, they did that. The angle, they did that angle. It was even remotely entertaining. Oh yeah, so that's yeah. As if it was even remotely entertaining the last time they did it. That's what he's trying to, very Dave patois there in that sentence. That was hard to parse.
I wish Kevin actually had forgot about that one.
Sonny Ono is attempting to recruit several of the fired Mexican wrestlers into the racial discrimination lawsuit he has against WCW. Where WCW is going to look really bad is not with Ono, Harrison Norris, or Bobby Walker, but if they can bring into the suit wrestlers who have headlined and been successful elsewhere, Magnum Tokyo, Ultimo Dragon, Shima, and Hector Garza, who were all given no chance whatsoever in WCW and were given ideas for demeaning characters, and combine that with the comments made by Vince Russo in that interview about no Japanese or Mexican wrestlers can get over in this country, combined with things like the pinata match and the tequila bottle finish. And let's face it, particularly since the company is a Turner company based in Atlanta. Speaking of Hector Garza, those who know him say that even though he's only making half the money as a main eventer in Mexico that he made as one of the lowest paid guys in WCW, he's said to be much happier.
I can't imagine why.
Steiner's suspension that he's on at the moment, I can't remember how much we talked about that before, is said to be for 90 days. Flair met with Jesse Ventura on 216 in Minneapolis for a fundraising event and for part of his running for governor thing. WCW wanted Bret Hart on the Germany tour to do his interviews on the shows as a heel. Hart, who was the most popular wrestler in Germany for most of the 90s, thought the idea was nuts and went out, immediately got a huge face response and did a babyface promo. I love that.
That just sums up Brett's WCW
Man
run.
does not give a shit. Do you want to know how silly mind control is? WCW ran a contest involving Flair and Hogan. I'm actually not sure what the contest was for. Anyway, we got numerous reports from people who said when you vote for Flair, the vote total for Hogan automatically increases by five. In the same vein, Chris Jericho's fiance recently came across a WCW doll package with a doll of Jericho and Malenko, which he didn't have, so bought it for him. On the receipt, the names on the merchandise were Hogan and Sting. So, in other words, the royalties for the dolls went into the accounting for Hogan and Sting instead of Jericho and Malenko.
I remember that story very well.
I remember both of those stories. That like boys in the back were starting to find out like how much they had tipped the scales to try and like gain back the money that they had to pay Hogan. Billy Kidman did an interview on The Law where he was kind of talking shit about Hogan's comments on him. We're clearly heading in the direction like they're about to make that into a TV feud in a couple of months. Hogan loved this, like ever the fucking bluster on Man Cow on 218, saying that his match with Luger is going to turn the company around, and said that wait, this for a guy who is still in the company, still under contract, and still you would think has a vested interest in that company being successful, said nobody under 40 on the WCW roster has any credibility in wrestling. Right. And this is the thing, right? Like at this stage,
Kevin Nash would have been under 40 at this point.
so we know from Death of WCW and we know from The Observer that the idea of doing a company-wide angle of the young guys versus the old guys has been brewing for a while. I mean, we had the old age outlaws gimmick was happening on TV for a while. We're about a month away from Millionaires Club and New Blood actually being a thing on television. That happens in March. So I'm sure what he is alluding to is that these plans are afoot, right? But this is very similar to my problems with The Rock's promos sometimes. Is that there's a line to walk where you are obviously criticizing your opponent, criticizing the other guy, you're cutting a promo and you don't want to be all nice and go, oh, you're the best in the world and stuff like that. But there's a line that gets crossed at a certain point where you are disparaging somebody in a way that does no service to the angle, but lowers the value of the whole thing to a fan. I think that's one of those cases here. Where it's like there's a way to talk about, like, these young people, they don't know the ropes yet. They're young and they're hungry and they're talented, but they're not the stars we are yet. Do you know what I mean? Or you do the, old Yeller's not ready to be put out yet. You'll have to take our spots from our cold, dead hands. Anything like that. But saying that, like, none of them
No
have
credibility.
any credibility in wrestling is crazy.
I mean, look, we all know that the whole storyline was botched from fucking beginning to end, but
As Dave points out, like Goldberg's in his early 30s, biggest star in the fucking company. Like, yeah, he's at the Perry Saturn, never drew a dime. Like, I love that that's the guy that he lists. Perry Saturn never drew a dime and never would. Blamed Russo's writing for the current problems in WCW, which again is alluding to like these guys do not care for each other one bit. I wonder if that'll ever come up again, Lee, huh?
Oh, God.
Again, I have no real interest in it. Like this paragraph goes on for a while. You gotta imagine like Hogan on Man Cow, he's gonna talk some absolute breeze and they're not gonna stop him.
Of course, just gonna let him go.
Of the many power plant guys working in Nashville, Alan Funk has gotten the highest marks. Kid Romeo has also looked good. Chuck Palumbo has great size, and they sent Mona to work as his baby face manager. Along those lines,
I'm trying to imagine Mona and Chuck Palumbo as a
yeah,
baby face duo.
that never made TV. I feel like
No.
I would remember that, like unless it happened on Saturday night at some stage.
We'll get Aaron to look into that one verse.
Along those lines, CG Afi, aka Tony Marinara, was fired. The idea was that Disco Inferno took his spot as manager of the Mamelukes. Everyone who saw him raved about Afi's work, even though he's already had far too many concussions for a lifetime. So there maybe is a valid reason if that's the one. The idea of firing a guy with talent in his early 20s, making no money for budgetary reasons that everybody raves about in the ring, who never really had a chance to show it due to bad timing and injuries, while keeping these guys making 30 or 40 times as much that only hurt the company is yet another problem. But if the guy really had as many concussions as he claims, it may have been the merciful thing to do. That's a very interesting. I had never really heard that people had seen Tony Marinaro work and were like super high on him. Because Tony Marinaro is kind of, again, it's very much, we portrayed it as it happened. Like, it's a very blink and you'll miss it part of the Mamelukes run.
Yeah, he obviously goes on to have a much kind of more famous run in ECW as Tony Mameluke with Little Rito at the new FBI. Yeah, I mean, I've always thought he was fine in ring. I don't think he was ever anything like he'd never blow your socks off. I think it more speaks to the standards of the power plant that they were like, oh yeah, this guy is fucking, this guy is great.
Yeah. I mean, look, we will talk about the other guys as they come up. Like, I would concur that, like, I think Chuck Palumbo, I think his story is the career of a guy who was absolutely solid, had a great look, but just never put it all together. So I can
Didn't.
see why they'd be high on him, because at that stage of development, you think he probably will put it together. Kid Romeo, again, very, very fun to watch, and we'll talk about him later. And there will be lots to be said about young Alan Funk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there will be. Here's my favorite one of the week, and then we actually no, we'll go two more. So Sting has pulled himself off a run of house show matches. Please don't ask me why he's allowed to do things like that and still gets paid what he gets paid. It's very funny from Dave. My final thing, and this is a famous thing. If you read Death WCW, you may remember this, Lee. If things couldn't get worse, there is a Super Brawl ad in a Toledo paper called The Blade. I want you to finish this sentence that had a photo of blank in it. Do you remember this story?
I don't remember. I've read that
Okay.
WCW, but I don't remember the
Okay.
story.
I think it's in Death of WCW. I could be wrong. Maybe it's in the Nitro book.
I've read
Or
both of
maybe it's
them.
just
I
something
mean,
I maybe it's
yeah.
something I knew from a shoot interview, but we'll see
Anyway,
if
but go on.
it jogs your memory. Lee, who is the very worst person at exactly this time in wrestling to put on the poster to sell your company and the pay-per-view that they are having?
Very worst person
Yes.
in the year 2000.
Yes. I don't mean I'm not trying to steer you towards somebody who's canceled or evil or anything like that. I'm thinking the dumbest fucking thing you can do.
Oh, so like, who are you using to sell your pay-per-view? That's just absolutely.
Nope. Not necessarily.
What to go on?
Somebody, I'll give you the hint. Somebody that doesn't even work
I
there.
was thinking that, yeah. Is it
The
Austin?
Super Brawl, yes, the Super
Yeah.
Brawl Toledo newspaper ad had Stone Cold Steve
Yeah, that's
Austin
what
on
I thought,
it,
yeah.
who not only is the biggest star in the other company, but is currently not even active in that company, having been brutally murdered by a car by Big Keesh not that long ago.
Isn't this the story of they mixed up Goldberg and Austin?
Yes, I believe so. Just unbelievable shit. WWF jumped to their news. They signed a new 5-year contract with Sky Sports in the UK for $35 million starting in May, which will provide this. That's a huge amount of money for that
Huge in
time.
2000, fucking hell.
Station with 440 hours of programming per year, with a schedule of SmackDown, Raw, LiveWire, Superstars, Metal, Shotgun as well. He's forgetting Shotgun was still running in 2000. 8 pay-per-view events and some WWF classics. They also mention, without naming the money, the deal that's still in place for until mid-2001 with Channel 4 in the UK as well. But it
That
was an
gets cut
interesting,
short.
yeah, it was an interesting thing to behold, to be a wrestling fan over here at that time, because they were called pay-per-views, and we've always called them pay-per-views, and as far as we're concerned, they're still called pay-per-views. But if we had Sky Sports over here and we had Channel 4 everybody had. Sky Sports was a subscription platform, a subscription channel. But if you had those, you only had to pay for the big four every year. And actually, not even really, because it wasn't always
Three.
the big four. So, yeah, 3 to 4 you had to pay for a year, because you'd have to pay for the UK ones. So that'd actually beef it up to 5. So Rebellion and Insurrection were always Sky box office.
Yes, they were.
WrestleMania was usually box
Wasn't
office.
always.
Wasn't always. And this is the thing. The rest of it, there was no rhyme or
There
reason,
was
because
no rhyme or reason, yeah.
Royal Rumble 2000 was on Channel 4. I know SummerSlam 2000 and 2001 were both on Sky Sports, because I have VHS recordings of them still.
Backlash 2000, I want to say, was Channel 4.
Yes, it was. And 2001 was Sky Sports, because I have that VHS tape. if it's a, this is the thing I remember, because if it's a VHS tape I have, it wasn't Sky Box Office, but X7 was Sky Box Office because I had to borrow that tape off somebody I didn't watch it live.
But yeah, no, it was like, it was definitely three or four up until the year.
So
It was
5 year deal, so it'd be
that contract.
2005.
Yeah, it was 2005, and then it went to every, I think it was every other pay-per-view, maybe.
Yeah, it was like
If
that was
not
right in the
all of
middle of the
them.
brand split. And I remember I used to laugh because the way it worked is that almost always the bad one would be the one that would be on box office. Do you know, like when SmackDown was sucking shit, it was their pay-per-views were often Sky Box Office, and when Raw was fucking Reign of Terror, Triple H, all of them for some reason happened to be on.
And then I want to say later in the 2000s, it was then every pay-per-view you had to pay for.
Yeah, it got to that stage eventually, but by then, like, internet was good enough that none of us were paying for it anymore.
But yeah, no,
But yeah, it was
it's
just an interesting time that, like, you would just randomly, like, SummerSlam is just free to air, like a free, like not free free, but it was like no additional cost on the sports channel you already had, which is great for a lot of us because like none of us, it's not like now with like when we had the network or anything like that where you're paying specifically for the wrestling, you were getting these pay-per-views basically free because it was because your dad or somebody had Sky Sports for the football and wrestling was just an added bonus. I would fail to I would find it hard to believe almost anybody in that period of time had Sky Sports for the wrestling.
No, sure,
Because this was the peak of the Barclays.
you had the wrestling on Sky One if you wanted
Yeah, SmackDown every Saturday morning. SmackDown and
it.
Livewire every Saturday on Sky One, which is free, and Shotgun and Metal every Sunday on as well. And then Heat was on Channel
He would be
4
on Channel
as
4
well.
in the evenings,
Yeah, so Raw was the only thing you're missing, but you're getting all the highlights of Raw on the supplemental
the recap
shows.
shows,
Anyway, yeah, so those are kind of like the, I suppose you want to say the news notes of interest. Like I said, it's a very dull week.
Look, things are going to get a bit more exciting as we approach the reboot.
Yeah, 100%. That is going to be like, I wonder, is that going to be our first? It's either that or Bash at the Beach are going to be like a two, have to be a fucking two-parter episode. No one else. But anyway, let's get into it without further ado. And this is Thunder 101, from Reno, Nevada. It is the 23rd of February 2000, a 2.03 rating. The rating is down by 0.37.
I just want to point out it was very nice of us to end this show on Thunder 100.
Yeah, wasn't it? Like I there's definitely people that had something in the back of their head that's like these fuckers are just gone now. Like this is it. They the 100 was enough and then they were done. I said I would not have started this podcast unless I intended to finish it. And God damn it, the grave will not stop me. Lee will have to do. I famously said on a very early podcast, I want to be the first posthumous podcaster. Lee will be on here with a fucking Ouija board before I'll give up on
Listen,
finishing this run.
AI has come forth in leaps and bounds since we started the
Yeah, and
show.
I'll tell you what, there's enough hours of my voice out there that you probably could program anything but Grok to do a very able job replacing me at this stage. Anyway, that grim reminder of our mortality aside.
I heard Gareth Kidney's not up to much these days. He might step in for you.
Yes. He's just down in Summer Bay with Alf Stewart. That's all he's doing now. Anyway, we get a flashback to what's happened since since last we were on Thunder Road. The Chosen One was screwed for the last time, says Jeff in our opening video. He has signed a document for a rematch for the title. Harris Brothers running roughshod all over Nitro, fucking snooze. Flair currently mad at Dustin. Lex has declared he's not done with Hogan in the feud that's going to definitely turn the company around, I was told. Flair and Lex attack Jimmy Hart. I love the line here where it was it Heenan on commentary said it's a mercy kill, finish him off, I say. Great. Then we see Flair and Lex beating down Hogan in the cage, and then they break Doug Dillinger's arm, the heartless bastards.
Bastards.
Hey, wouldn't you know it, Lee? Nash is in a wheelchair with his nurses and he has amnesia.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm guessing that we're going forward with the amnesia story.
Yeah. Our opening contest is Fit Finley versus Evan Courageous with the other 2-3 count lads. I gotta say, like, if there's a spectrum of physiques, these are two polar opposite. Like, the young cut couldn't be more oiled up if he was in a pool of it. Evan Courageous versus fucking Cube Da Fit Finley.
What with Northern Irish men and looking like fucking just looking square. Yeah.
Was it somebody, I was listening to a podcaster that was talking about, you know, the Swiss footballer, retired Swiss footballer, Jerdan Shaqiri, mm-hmm. and his sometimes used nickname of the power cube. That is very much Fit yeah. Finley. He's just square. He is a square. In many ways, he's a square. The match is bad. The match is bad. But I do have to give it up to Fit Finley a little bit because I did enjoy my one thing about this match is that Fit Finley at this stage in his career in WCW gives the vague sense of being mildly annoyed he was asked to wrestle these people.
I have it in my notes. I'll be a fair man. This is the best Finley match we've seen on the show.
It's just like there's a little bit of just going, I'm fucking...
And it's because he won't sell for them. He just keeps hitting them.
Won't sell, not interested to be there. He's just going to hit the fucking pay window. So this goes on for a couple of fairly dull minutes. And the thing that gave me comfort was the only person more bored of this than me was Fit Finley.
Yes.
And then he hits a tombstone and wins it. It's like a minute, maybe 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Brain and today. Now, I got to say, one thing they've added to the production in the last 6 months in WCW that I really appreciate is that they actually run down the card at the start of the show.
Yep.
This was something that, Jesus, we could have used that in 1998, 1999. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck me. But they're doing it now. The only time they used to do it, I remember early doors, the only time they used to do it is when they'd run one of their many fucking wacky tournaments for a title that they didn't actually care about.
I wonder, is it a symptom of having a smaller roster? So not everybody is at the taping.
Yeah.
So there's less kind of booking on the fly. It's like, okay, no, this is who we got here tonight.
Yeah.
So we need to use them.
Yeah, they might have actually decided before everybody has already changed and in their gear what's going to happen for once. So we go to the back and Nash has no idea
in general
who he is. And he starts doing this bit, right? Which you got to remember in 2000 is like a 30-year-old bit where he's being specifically Jim Gordon from the Adam West Batman.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be seen to be believed, Lee. But that is what he's doing. And it's not like he's doing it with nuance and subtlety. Like, he's talking about the bat phone and stuff yes. like that. Like, the only way you would be unclear as to exactly what he was doing is if you had never heard of Batman before.
Now, I just want to point out that people thought Kevin Nash was cool.
Yeah.
And here he Man. Is booking himself to do bits based on a 30-year-old campy
yeah.
Batman show.
And look, there's a certain element to which I'm just like, look, as the smartest guy in the room who has his guaranteed money and absolutely has sniffed out that this company is dying on its arse irreversibly, there's a certain extent to which I'm like, mate, fill your boots, fucking pop yourself. Who cares at this point? But also, yeah, it's not cool. He's not cool.
No.
Like, the only thing that's cool is how little he cares about his own employment. That's very cool. Like, I will not deny that his flippancy with regards employment is very cool.
Mm.
But it's something we've said, isn't it, since the very start of covering Nash on this show, is that the times Nash is trying to be cool and funny, he's very much not.
Oh, yeah. He just the epitome of uncool, doing fucking, like I say, bits from a campy Batman show.
He's your uncle, like, at the dinner
yeah,
table.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Trying to do bits that the people, it's not that they don't get the bits, it's that they don't accept the premise of the bit. The bit isn't funny.
It's like if I sat down now and started trying to do bits from the Fast Show with Connor and his friends.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, no, because the Fast Show is not as far removed from today as 60s Batman was
Yeah,
from it. Do
true.
you know what I mean? So you're giving yourself this would be, God, what would be like a, you'd be doing skits from Men Behaving Badly. That's what you'd be doing. Dropping fucking Martin Clunes references to your kids.
Jesus Christ.
I see that other guy that lives with him. He went on to be Bob the Builder. Anyway, so Mean Gene is with the NWO and the nurses next. And your out of pocket Gene Okerlund line of the week is to say, hey, these girls don't spend too much time on their feet, do they? Perhaps my. I did laugh a little bit at this, which is like the perfect. This is exactly how a meeting between these two personalities would work out, as Buff Bagwell tries to flirt with Daff, and she just screams directly at his face and runs away.
Yeah, sadly, I don't think that's the only time a woman has screamed in Buff's face and ran away from him.
No. Nor the only time I would imagine that poor Daphne had to scream in frustration at the fucking state of some of them, the
Yes.
lads in WCW. Flair comes out with Hogan's weight belt that he whipped him with in the cage on Monday. He's not out very long when Vampiro comes out to challenge him. Does this whole like they are trying to like fast forward the like they've skipped the whole middle part of Vampiro's push. Where like Vampiro was 50-50 with fucking embarrassing, boring, green ass wrestlers for like 6 months, and now it's like, yeah, this guy could challenge Ric Flair.
Yeah, it's like he went from losing clean to like Alex, or sorry, Berlin and the Wall and like being the third man in their feud. So now it's like, yeah, he can face Ric Flair.
You know what's really funny, and it's like you want to talk about the things that you memory hole, is like I don't, even though I know I'm watching at this time. Because I remember having been watching it for a while when they do the shutdown Nitro before the reboot. But I don't have a clear memory of anything Vampiro is doing until the Sting feud.
Yeah, I mean we've talked about it on the show. Like when Vampiro came in, we were both like, oh yeah, we were waiting for this, looking forward to seeing Vampiro. And then we're like, I don't remember this part of Vampiro's career where he's just this underneath guy that doesn't get used.
Yeah, it's a lot of, and like I don't think we're to be blamed, but I think it's lots of little bits of nothing. It's completely understandable how you wouldn't remember that because like he's quite literally doing nothing memorable.
He's just gone through that, like, Kidman, are they friends, are they not friends feud.
Yeah.
And it's, like you said, it's just nothing. It means nothing. There's no lasting impression.
Which again is the most concrete thing he's done since he's arrived. And even that was no great shakes because, again, because it's WCW and everything's on fast forward, they weren't together long enough for you to get invested in the dissolution of their partnership. So Flair is indignant at the idea that Vampiro would even challenge him, and we are on. La Parca, fucking hell, this is still going. The La Parca dubbed promos. Allah, again, you want to talk about an out of date bit? Wayne's World 2 was the guts of a decade previous.
Yeah, was what, 91,
That's
92?
early 90s, yeah. And they're doing the dubbed bit. He now the one thing I will laugh at is him describing the dubbed La Parca calling his fans Parca maniacs did make me laugh a little bit. And even Mean Gene is tired of this shtick. Mean Gene, who exclusively deals in tired shtick, is tired of this. Not quite the level he would in a very infamous promo when he was sick of the Natural Born Thrillers, but his face reads that level of
Yeah.
frustration. Do you remember, like, again, this is like a thing where I don't remember these dub promos. And I have to assume my instinct tells me that this is just going to randomly be dropped around the time of
I think it gets
the
dropped around a
reboot.
reboot. Yeah, it
Yeah,
doesn't
yeah.
continue on past that.
Wayne's World 2, by the way, 1993. So a 7-year-old movie. And if you want to say it was a 7-year-old movie that was doing parodies of like that skit with the dubbing.
70s movies.
Yes, yeah. Like, so that was like a nostalgia bit 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm just laughing at my own notes, popping myself here. How vain is that? Gormless cook David Flair is jealous that Daphne spoke to Buff Bagwell.
Okay.
Then we have, I'll tell you one thing, a person I never thought I'd see again on WCW television, as Nash summons Alfred, which, by the way, you want to talk about, you put on your comic book guy glasses for a minute and go, well, actually, why would Commissioner Gordon ever be summoning Alfred? He's Bruce Wayne's butler. But he summons Alfred. And who was Alfred Lee? One Ralphus.
Yeah.
Fair play, like obviously still employed, just doing. He was like a roadie, wasn't he?
Yeah,
like,
he was ring truck guy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So clearly, like he just kept that gig after he'd been on national TV for the guts of a year.
After asking for his what was 150 grand contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Little Ralph's cameo there. Singles match next. Berlin versus La Parca. And as soon as they came out of the ring, I just wrote in my notes, God, this show has been awful. I love one of my favorite tropes in wrestling. Like, although it is a thing that leans into the dumb wrestling fan stereotype, is fans chanting USA at a match that features no American competitors. Who are you cheering for? Anyway, Berlin attacks him at the bell. Superplex gets blocked. Tornado DDT blocked by Berlin. Parker hits a nice looking Russian leg sweep, and then a corkscrew, and wins against a man that Tenay. I'll tell you what, like Mike Tenay is somebody that like struggles sometimes to maintain his credibility. He doesn't have the JR lingo of like bowling shoe ugly. He sometimes sells himself short and over eggs it on things he shouldn't. He describes Berlin as a top WCW talent in this losing effort. Let that sit there in your brain for a few minutes.
Don't know who that says more about.
Yes, it's not worth dwelling about. Speaking of something that's not worth dwelling on, Tank Abbott cuts a promo that, God, like, how is this company, with the history it has, so forgetful about the value of, if someone can't talk, put a fucking manager that can with them. Like, I'm not saying Tank Abbott would have turned the business around, but I'm saying you gave this man no chance by putting a microphone in his hands.
What if the person they gave him as a mouthpiece was Vince Russo?
Powers that be, just in his Dr. Claw chair.
No, actual like Vince Russo speaking on behalf of Tank Abbott.
Oh, just coming out with Tank Abbott talking about Spaldings all the time.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd care for that, to be honest with you.
Like full on leather jacket, baseball bat in his hand, talking about how New York is
with
the center of the world.
Fake Iron Man theme song.
Yeah.
Anyway, if I talk about something else I don't care about, in the middle of this boring hell promo, who should walk in? Speaking of he's still employed moments of the week, Virgil comes into camera, rebranding himself as quite famously Mike Longpaws Jones. Which is very much stealing in advance the Landstorm Calgary dramatic pause Alberta Canada bit. So now he's demanding a match. You can bet how that goes. We'll talk about it in a couple of segments. Gormless idiot David Flair takes on Buff Bagwell next. The Gormless one gets the heat when Maestro and Symphony almost immediately comes out. Buff whips David into Daff, who falls on the Maestro, inverted DDT for the win, and Maestro jumps Buff at the bell. Just a Vince Russo classic. It's like, how can we figure out how to do this match and avoid wrestling?
I think you've missed the character progression that's gone on with Buff Bagwell.
Oh, please do tell.
So we've already seen him hit on Daffy. We know he got his ass kicked at the January pay-per-view that I can't remember the name of, Solo, by DDP, for hitting on Kimberly and implying that they were just friends, inverted commas. We then saw a flashback right before this match started where Bagwell was chasing Symphony.
Yeah.
It's character progression, Dave.
Okay.
The character progression being
you want to talk about,
man is creep.
I thought I was going down a blind alley by trying to, like, you know, convince myself that watching this was interesting and historically significant.
No.
You've gone to a whole other level of going, no, actually, I'm seeing character development here.
Creepy man creeps on women. That's basically Buff Bagwell's character now.
Yeah, the also Pepe Le Pew of pro wrestling, like.
Also, Bagwell is so checked out that he no longer wants to do the blockbuster, so he's just started doing a reverse DDT.
Yeah, you just—I don't know if you misspoke or was a thing on our connection here, but it sounded like you called him Blagwell, and that is very fucking accurate because he is just fucking blagging his way through this job at the for the last year and a half of its existence. We get a recap of the pay per view. We then get the singles match of Mike Jones and Tank Abbott. Mike Jones got two offensive moves in this minute long match, and it was too many.
I was going to say it was offensive that he got those moves in.
Yes, I was personally offended by those moves. A singles match, Vampiro versus Ric Flair.
You missed a segment. Ralphus was with Kevin Nash.
Oh, I do apologize. Tell me what happened.
No, that's all I have.
Oh, okay. Ralphus gets two for the price of one. I wonder, does he double dip? Does he get paid for two segments here?
Possible.
Hope so. More power to the lad. Vampiro, surprising again. This is the thing. I think a lot of people, when they see the spooky gimmick, they don't know the origins of Vampiro and where he worked before he got WCW. So I think it might surprise some people. And definitely the way the match was laid out, the idea was that it surprised Rick that he was quite enthusiastic about doing mat and limb work. So there's a lot of submission, wacky lucha submission attempts from Vampiro. He gets the better of Flair for the good while of the few minutes this match lasts, but then he misses a top rope leg drop, which gives Flair an opening to attack. I had a problem with the inevitable run-in that comes in with this match. I obviously have a problem with there being a million run-ins in every show anyway, but I felt like it made no sense. The timing of having Lex run out to help Flair when Flair already had the heat. You want to be bringing out Lex either when it's 50-50 or when Vampiro is, you know, looking like he's going to win, and not just him ambling out when Rick looks like this is going to be a piece of piss for him.
Let's see, Rick was on top and then Vamp did, you know, got the hope spot of a two count off an inside pack, inside cradle.
That's
when they came out.
That Lex was just incensed. The crowd are completely over it. There's just no fucking reaction whatsoever to this. Vampiro takes down Flair, goes up top. Lex gets the baseball bat. Vamp is down. Figure 40 taps out. Then we get, which is such a fucking, like, such a thing. Like, this is again one of the things that breaks the suspension of disbelief in wrestling. Like, if somebody stopped in the middle of running from an Irish whip, kind of thing. Vamp is backstage, and they announce that following review of the footage, they've reversed the decision, thus invalidating all screwy finishes in the history of wrestling where they could have just gone back, looked at the monitors, and reversed the decision. The whole thing that this whole weird internal logic of professional wrestling is supposed to hang up on the fact that the referee's decision in the ring is final.
Yes. That the referee's,
well
the referee's backstage
fucking
have a
VAR in professional wrestling.
so do them.
Anyway. Booker then warns Kidman that he better have his back out there. We get a Nitro flashback, which I have dubbed the assassination of Terry Funk by the coward Dustin Rhodes. Okay, I have a question for you, Lee. Dustin is here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to play a game, hopefully the only time we ever have to play this, where you will answer for me. What is more Nancy? Is it the fact that Dustin is still clearly wearing the 7 jacket he bought and didn't want to admit was a wasted investment? Or is it the fact that other than the 7 jacket, he has been known to be dressed like a red latex pirate? underneath it.
Can I go with option C?
Okay.
Dustin is still coming out to the Seven music.
Yeah. The spooky pedophile.
The spooky pedophile music is still being used.
Yeah.
He definitely would have
The
fit
thing,
in.
right? The thing that we didn't talk about in terms of like how stupid this fucking Seven thing is. Like, pedophiles are already spooky. Why did you have to make him an extra spooky pedophile? It's not like people were gonna go, "Oh, that pedophile is sure a hell of a guy." But no, he's supernatural. I immediately have lost trust for him.
Why did this pedophile have white face paint on?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it like, is that the thing? Is like, lure you into my van, I've got face paint.
I've got face paint on a leather duster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, Dustin probably would have fit in on the Queen Mary next to
Bryce.
Tobias.
Bryce is Queen Mary.
Oh
Fuck,
man,
I'm raging you got to the first Arrested Development reference of our return arc here on the show, but I salute you for it, my friend. Dustin says people should be asking why he didn't take the ambulance and run over Terry Funk's old ass. So he's waiting for this moment. And for what? He references a broken home and a closet full of gold costumes. Says he's far from done with Funk. Terry gets on the screen and says he's delighted for a new chapter in Funk versus the Rhodes family. He says that he and his dad weren't men, they were horse manure. Rhodes is enraged and attacks some crew members. Brain repeatedly, like, and this is clearly one of those, like, you know, when they had Flair cut the promo on Carlito on Raw famously and called him out for being lazy. There is a pointed criticism to Bobby Heenan on commentary saying multiple times how great it is to see Dustin have some fire. Where it's clearly like it has been mentioned to him by several veterans that he's acting like he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, he's just fucking drifting along, like.
Because this whole thing is poor, but for Brain to circle in on that to encourage him is very telling, I think. Mickey J is backstage. God damn it. We won't dwell on this particular part too much because of what's coming, but Mickey J asked to have Slick's suspension lifted so he can kick his ass, and Terry Taylor approves. We have the World Cruiserweight title on the line as Prince Iaukea, the Flat Pack Sovereign, takes on Crowbar. It's going well for the Nutter. Until he tries to bring in a kendo stick and he gets punched in the head for the pleasure. Top rope, nothing from IKEA gets reversed into a Northern Lights for two, which was cool looking. Crowbar up top, IKEA follows him. Both men go face first off the rope. Paisley gets in but gets big mad when she sees Daphne and IKEA making eyes because of her purple wig. So this is the whole thing. It's just, look, he's just horny for anything purple.
He just loves purple, yeah.
Yeah. So that's done. Like, he sees a purple wig, and that's just gas station boner pill material for Prince IKEA here. So we get a cat fight because obviously, Crowbar runs into a standing sidekick, diving DDT and win. And in perhaps one of the most accurate assessments of a pro wrestling company in the history of media, TNA calls WCW an asylum on wheels.
Yeah.
Perhaps could only have been more accurate if he said on fire or careening towards a cliff as well.
It's a living fucking trash fire.
Yeah. Singles match, speaking of trash fire, up next. Try fucking stop them from making this a main event in any building. Disco Inferno versus The Wall. As much as you would find it hard to believe, Lee, given how he was booked for several months at the start, we have a video package during his entrance about how The Wall has actually finally been on a streak of wins. Again,
That's
something
good.
very basic, and he would get over pretty reasonably well with WCW fans. So all of a sudden they were like, hey, we have a big guy. He can't really wrestle, but what if we just have him win a lot?
Makes sense.
Novel.
Did oh God, like I'm just looking at my notes for this. It's so fucking bad. Glane and Idol jumped the Mamelukes.
Or as they call them, the Marmadukes. Which I will say, I did laugh.
Look, Lenny Lane, good comedy wrestler. Yeah, and Disco is saying he's not a wrestler, and some would question, was he ever a wrestler?
Now, I will say the comedy chops of Disco were in effect here, and I will give him a slight bit of credit that he very well sold. He still did his entrance, assuming the two guys were on his shoulder behind him, absolutely giving it the big one because his big mates were there to protect him. And only when it was too late to avoid disaster against the wall did he realize he was by himself.
But yeah, just it's fucking like, why did we need this?
We didn't. Huge agree on the, by the way, you said it there. Disco said he's not a wrestler. Huge agree. He tries to bail. Wall grabs him, whip, boot, tree slam, gorilla press, misses a corner charge. Disco does a chop block and a clothesline to take him down to his level, punches and kicks in the corner, but the wall resists being whipped out of the corner, punches him square in the head, swinging neck breaker from Disco. Yeah, I completely lost the run. I just stopped typing for the rest of this match. It was obviously so fucking dull.
He wins with a choke slam. That's what.
Yeah. It's like he gets an elbow for two, and then Wall just stops selling and choke slams him, doesn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Lex with Gene vows to take Sid out tonight. Then we get Billy Kidman and Booker with Tori in their corner versus Big Ron and Heavy D, the Harris brothers. God, I had forgotten about the Booker having no music thing. Still fucking sucks. Fuck that whole storyline. The Harris brothers double cradle slam finish thing finally has a name, and it is the H bomb. It's not a good finish.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
It looks like they're doing Rockabye Baby.
let's not ask where they got that name from.
Yeah. Speaking of which, my next note, the black shirts are dominant early. They are wearing black shirts. That is factually true.
Yes, it is factually correct.
Booker hot tag starts laying waste to them. First time the crowd might have properly come alive all night was for Booker's fiery hot tag. Booker nearly wins with a Russian leg sweep, but then sadly runs into a H-bomb. Kidman was outside with Tori, didn't make the save. This causes a row between them because no team can coexist, Lee.
Especially with Kidman. Kidman has a lot of these can they coexist teams.
This is when we have the Saturday night tease, I believe. We're gonna have Duggan versus Regal, title versus career. So this is the Regal write-off. Which again, you want to talk about something we have no memory of. Regal being this late in WCW, shocking to me.
Well, he was rehired in
Not that long ago.
November.
Yeah.
And then sacked, yeah, because it was only a matter of months he was back.
Yeah.
Because it was what? August, September when he passed out in Vince's office. It was late in 99. But yeah, we then get an ad for Uncensored. And I have this note because they call Uncensored the most anticipated show of the year.
We lie. A lie for liars.
I mean, even for advertising, that seems egregious.
Yeah, that should break some sort of advertising standards. We get a non-title match, the Total Package versus Sid Vicious. God bless Sid. This is not the guy you put Sid in with.
No.
It's very formulaic. Because again, Lex is somebody that has maybe too much pride and too much ego about him to go, let's have the top star in the company have a dominant win. So it has to follow the pattern of any of those matches where the heel needs to have his ego massaged, where, okay, we'll let Sid run roughshod for a minute, and then I must have a long, excruciating heat period.
And then
Sid comes.
when it looks like I'm going to be beaten, my stable mate runs in.
Sid comes back, goes for a powerbomb. Flair runs in, as you say. He gets shoved away. No sells the chops. He boots Flair, choke slams Lex. Liz slips package the bat. He goes to powerbomb Flair, bat to the back of his legs, and which is really funny, by the way, because I assume you noticed that when Sid gets hit in the back of the head, Flair also gets hit in the hands with the bat. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
And what's really funny is after all this, by the way, there's been shenanigans and outright flagrant rule breaking happening in front of the referee for over 30 seconds. And it's only after Flair gets a boo-boo on his hand that the ref calls the DQ.
Yeah, it's WCW.
And then our final segment as we go off, not with like a real heated angle or anything like that, we get the NWO lads saying, hey, let's go out there. The referee corps nobly blocks them from going out to cause any more chaos. And then Mickey J eats a guitar credits.
That's so a hot angle to close the show.
Yeah, your closing angle on Thunder to whet your appetite for Nitro next week and Thunder next week is a referee eating shit from a guitar.
Well, I mean, he is a referee that just challenged the NWO referee.
Yeah. Dog shit. Lee, I'm gonna reveal something here now as we go to close the show that
you
I
quit?
Made history, and this is a sign of, yeah, this is a sign of how bad this show was. 101 episodes of Thunder, and for the first time, I have forgotten to complete the finish counter. Brought to you by Ludwig Borga.
Wow.
This, because normally what I do is I keep a running tally as the show goes on. So I know the number of matches beforehand. I fill in my little grid on my notes for anybody who've read my show notes on Patreon. And I'm normally going right. I was so into an almost fugue state of semi-consciousness watching this show that I didn't even do my little scrolly up and down to do how many matches, let alone what the finishes were in this. So what I can say is the finish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga have some matches and some finishes. But I will leave the final say on 101 to you, Lee, before I will bring back the finish counter next week. And I might even do a catch-up finish counter and let you know what 101's finishes were. But Lee, overall thoughts on the show and your winners and losers?
Absolute dog shit episode of TV.
Yeah, diabolical.
Like when people talk about bad WCW to close out like the company, this is the kind of episode we're talking about. Yeah, it's just not good. There's nobody that came out better on this show than they went in.
Certainly not me.
Yeah, this was bad. This, you know, 101 episodes in, this is definitely a top 10 bad episode.
Yeah, because it wasn't even. The bad wasn't interesting enough to kind of like bullshit about. Like it was just
bad.
Just piss poor. Piss poor. Well, with that ringing endorsement for the remainder of Thunder Road out of the way, thank you all so much for joining us back here on the show. We'll be back over at largemanappears.com, our Patreon. Next week, we'll be back here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, this austere podcasting network. In 2 weeks. Thank you for being along with the journey. We'll see you all very soon.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.